Good morning and welcome to Kairos Church on this beautiful, humid Sunday morning. I'm thankful that you guys are here. I hope that you have enjoyed coffee and donuts, got your kids checked in, and that you are ready. Today, we're kicking off a new series called You Mad Bro. Turn to someone and say, "You mad, bro?" Oh, we're going to have some fun doing a little study on God's anger, on his wrath, on his judgment. It's kind of funny I say we're going to have fun talking about those things, right? But we are. We're going to have some fun. We're really going to take a deep dive into understanding anger in the Bible, divine anger, and what that looks like in our lives and in our anger as well, and really our view of God. I think there are, you know, many people who struggle with some of the things that took place in the Old Testament, some instances that took place, and you get to questioning, you know, why would a loving God do that? And so we're kind of going to look at that and kind of answer some of those questions. And what I would say to you, we're going to unpack this very, very deep expression of anger, and it's going to take some time to really unpack it and understand it. And so we're gonna take a few weeks. So I just want to preface in saying that, like, as we talk about this each week, if you're left with questions or maybe you're still wondering a few things, don't worry, we'll get to it. But at the same time, I would say, you know, each week as I'm talking, if something comes to mind or you have a question about something that I shared, man, write it down for yourself or write it on your prayer or your praise card. Let me know, because I want to be able to have a conversation about this, because this is something that is worth having a conversation about, as it does affect all of us. Now, I want to start with a little participation. So I'm going to ask a question, and I want you to answer. Don't feel like you're rude. You don't have to wait for anyone else. You don't have to raise your hand. If you're with us online, you know, type it in as well. I want to know what makes you angry. What is one thing that makes you angry? Let me hear it. Traffic. I heard traffic. What else? Louder for me. Repetitiveness, like doing the same thing over and over again. Yeah. Aurelis. All right, little counseling session later after church. Like, oh, my daughter does that. I can't be around her when she's eating, bro. I think she does it on purpose though. Yeah. That could make you angry. What else? Rude people. What else did I hear over here? Lack of courtesy, which rude people kind of go together. I mean, you probably heard some other things. There are many things that can cause us to get angry, cause us to really, you know, want to lash out. And it's the same is true for me. There are things that make me angry. I don't tend to get angry. Let me rephrase that. I don't tend to get angry on the outside. I'm real good at hiding it, my frustration, and being patient. That's not to say that I'm not angry on the inside, but I think for me, one of the things that I really get irate about, and being a parent, it doesn't just go to with being a parent, but one of the things that really makes me angry is telling my kids the same thing over and over, right? Someone said repetitiveness. Like that, like, you know what you need to do. Like, when it comes to chores, like, we have a list, and it doesn't change. You know what you need to do. Why haven't you done it? And it makes me, like, I boil on the, you know what I'm saying? I just get so, and, like, I'm kind of patient with it, but, like, after the 400th time, I should not have to tell you this. And I say it, you know, it happens with my kids, but let's be real, it happens with adults, too. And I'm sure you can think of instances, maybe in the workplace, or maybe it's with a friend. You know, you keep trying to give them advice, but they keep doing the same stupid stuff, and you just want to smack them and be like, "I told you," right? And we get angry about these things. But I think there's, you know, especially with what I was talking about with my kids, and just, you know, they are learning, they are growing, and, you know, we're trying to teach them, and they're figuring things out, and we want them to take ownership. But there's a lot of patience that comes along with raising kids, a lot of patience with even just teaching or training someone something new. This is something else for myself that I really struggle with. I'm one of those people that, like, if you come up and you ask me how to do something, I'm going to tell you how to do that thing, and I don't expect to tell you again, okay? That's bad, okay? And that's more my problem than anything else. But I am not, I tell people all the time, like, I'm not a good teacher because I'm going to teach you once and expect you to get it. Don't bother me about it again, okay? Okay, and that's your problem, not mine. Anyway, but that's something else. But there's this patience that comes along with it, this when we're dealing with situations like this where we have to be slow to get angry. And this is what we're going to talk about today. And really, we have this human perspective of anger, things that we deal with that really, really bother us, or how people have been angry toward us or express their anger in certain ways. And what tends to take place is we take our human perspective of anger and we like to put that on God. Right? So if something happened to us, someone was angry with us, if God does something, or if we read something, like we take that same perspective that we have as humans towards other humans, and we put that same thing on God. And honestly, that's something that we cannot do. But we read his stories, right? When we view his character, we read these stories, and we have our own learned experiences, and we find these stories sometimes in the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, a little bit appalling. Like, how you read something and you're like, God let this happen, or God caused this to happen, or God wanted this to happen. Why? And we in our own minds, we're like, how is God letting this happen? I thought he was a loving God. And so we read some of these things, or we hear these stories. Maybe we don't have the full context, and it gives us an even more negative view of anger, of God's anger, and even of God. I mean, think about some of these stories. I mean, we can go back to the first thing, the flood. Where God literally wiped out everybody but one family. And you read that story and you're like, yeah, you know what? I don't want to be on God's bad side. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to obey God. And I don't want to feel that wrath. And so it's hard to come to terms with God wiping out humanity all but one family. You move on a little bit and you get to Moses. And there's this story where the Israelites are, you know, they're just not being smart. They're not being obedient. They're making, you know, dumb choices. And in this story, like, God's like, all right, go kill 3,000 of those people. And you're like, it's kind of harsh. 3,000? What about when they're conquering the promised land? And they go into these cities, and God says to them, I want you to wipe out the men, the women, the children, and their lives. I want you to annihilate everything. And you're like, oh, Lord. This is hard to come to terms with. One story with King David, he takes a census to see how many warriors he is going to have, and then God sends a plague that kills 70,000 people. Whew, this is hard. You get to the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, and God, you know, burns down just raining fire and wipes out a whole town, and you're like, actually, you know what, they deserve that, and it's not a big deal. You know, it's funny. You see all these stories, and you see God just, you know, causing destruction, and, you know, you read the story about Sodom and Gomorrah and what the people were doing and just how just horrible and wicked they were, and like, they deserve that. I like when God does that. That's awesome. But at the same time, we deserve the same thing because we're just as wicked, but we don't want it. Ooh. Uh-oh. This is the reality. And we hear stories like this, and we say, man, how could a loving God do this? And we struggle. We struggle with God, this angry, vengeful, full of wrath God. So you hear stories like that. And as it is with, you know, things that are really bad, we tend to see bad things and give them more credence than we should, and we overlook all the good, right? So we read things about God. We heard all these bad stories, but then you hear things like this in Nehemiah, and this will be up on the screen. Nehemiah 9:31, however, and it's talking about God, in your abundant compassion, you did not destroy them or abandon them, for you are gracious and compassionate God. Exodus 34:6, the Lord passed by in front of him and proclaimed, the Lord God is compassionate, and he's gracious, and he's slow to anger, and he's abounding in loving kindness and truth. Numbers 14:18. The Lord is slow to anger and rich in faithful love, forgiving wrongdoing and rebellion, but he will not leave the guilty unpunished, bringing the consequences of the father's wrongdoing on the children in the third and the fourth generation. We're going to get to that one during this series. Psalm 86:15. But you, Lord, are compassionate and gracious, God, slow to anger and rich in faithful love and truth. Joel 2:13. Return to the Lord your God, for he is gracious, compassionate, slow to anger, rich in faithful love, and he relents from sending disaster. Those are just a handful of the scriptures that talk about God's character. And what you get is that God is compassionate, he is gracious, he's slow to anger, he's loving, and he's kind, and he's a God of truth. And I think we have a hard time believing that statement. The love and the compassion and all that stuff, but maybe we struggle with that slow to anger. Do you find yourself struggling with that? Do you find yourself comparing human expression of anger with this divine expression of anger? Do you find yourself asking that question, how could a loving God allow all these bad things to happen? So today and through this series, here's what we have to do. And this will be on the screen. To understand God's anger, we have to remove our human perspective of anger from our view of God. Stop judging God's character based on our human experiences or assumptions or even just a lack of knowledge or a lack of context in the things we hear about or read about. But I want to take a deep dive today into this phrase that we read about. It's called slow to anger. I want to pray, and then we'll dive into it. So pray with me. God, we thank you today for allowing us to come to this place to worship together freely. God, to lift up your name, to praise your goodness, and to learn more about who you are as a loving God. God, allow our hearts and minds to be open to your word and to your spirit. It's in Jesus' name that I pray. Amen. So the above passages, they talk about God being slow to anger. We hear stories, it seems the opposite. So let's look at this phrase, slow to anger. Now, if you read the King James Version, you're going to get this word that says long-suffering. It's a very long word, but it's a good word to describe slow to anger. And so really what it's saying is saying that God is slow to anger, so he suffers for a long time before actually expressing his anger. Go back to my kids and me, like, having to tell them the same thing ever. I told you, it's like after the 400th time, I'm like, okay, I'm done with you all, right? I'm long-suffering. I'm dealing with this for a long time before expressing my anger. I'm being patient. Now, the Hebrew for this phrase, slow of anger, it's two words, erech apayim. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but erech apayim. And here's what this means. You ready? Erech means long, and apayim means nostrils. So God, you ready, is long of nostrils, y'all. There's some truth right there that you didn't know you were going to get today. Long of nostrils. And so, like, you think about this. When you get angry, do you, like, you know what I'm saying? And you breathe in right before you're about to let it out. So you think about God being long of nostrils. He's just going, and he's just going to keep doing it. He's going to keep breathing it in, right? And he's long of nostril. And then it's going to take a long time for that anger to come out. So God is long of nostril. And we'll get into this. It's an expression, and I'm going to tell you about that in a minute. But it's also interesting to note, as you read about anger in the Bible, when you hear descriptions or expressions of anger, either for God or with other people, the anger is usually expressed to be hot, right? It's this hot, burning anger, burning wrath, right? In 1 Samuel 17:28, it's David. He's not the king yet, but he's a little shepherd, and they're at the war. They're fighting Goliath, and David goes to take his brothers some food, and he's trying to hear what's going on. And his brother Eliab, it says that his brother Eliab's nose burned hot toward David. Okay, so that's that same thing. His nostrils got really, really hot and steamy. This is the same phrase used to describe God's anger in Exodus 4:14. It says God's, it doesn't say this specifically, but in the Hebrew it says God's nose burned hot towards Moses. And so the biblical authors are writing about God and describe him as angry. They say his nostrils burned hot. And this is an expression that is most used to describe anger in the Bible. And you know what's funny about it is I think we can relate. We kind of understand. We even have an emoji for it, right? There it is. Go back to that emoji. It's that breathing in, and you get so fired up and so hot, and your face gets red, and the steam comes out. And when the steam comes out, you know if you see that happen, you better take off and get out the way because something bad's about to happen. So, like, we kind of understand this. But here's what I want you to take from this. The next time, and maybe you do something wrong, you think God's really angry, or you think God's going to rain down judgment on somebody, just picture him with really long, hot, steamy nostrils, okay? It'll help. I believe it'll help. Like, he's still breathing in. He's long suffering. And you're like, Pastor Brent, why is this important? Well, it gives us a little context about when we see this phrase, slow to anger, understanding this phrase. And honestly, it's just fun facts, right? And we need some fun as we're talking about anger. But on the real, for the majority of us, we are not long of nostril. We are not long suffering. Our anger, it comes out quick and it burns quick. And we react and we respond oftentimes without thinking. We fly off the handle and we lose our cool. And because that is what we're used to experiencing, or maybe that is how we tend to act, we place this same view of anger on God. And so we think anytime God does anything anger or gets angry, man, he was just wanting to, you know, do some damage that day. He's like, you know what, I'm bored. Flick, and he destroys the whole nation. But that's not the case. So what we must learn and believe is that, first and foremost, God is compassionate, he is gracious, he is kind, and he is loving. And he is slow to get angry. It's not that he doesn't get angry, but rather when he does, you better know it took a lot to get him to this point, and however he expresses his anger, there is a good reason for it. So let's segue into something else. Who thinks they know the first time, and if I shared this with you this week, or you heard me talking about it, do not spoil this for anybody else. I'm talking mostly to my staff. Who thinks they know the first time that God is described as being angry in the Bible? If you think you know, just shout it out. First time. I heard Sodom and Gomorrah over here. Adam and Eve. Anything else? Maybe the flood? You would think the flood? Maybe when Cain killed Abel, right? Like, come on, man, why'd you do that? Maybe when Abraham lied, not the first time or the second time, about his wife being his sister. Maybe when Sarah, Abraham's wife, who's now pushing 100, and God's messengers say you'll be pregnant next year, and she laughs at God? Come on. Are you going to laugh at me? I'd be angry, okay? Like, I am God. Anyway, the reality is it's none of those times. The first time that we see that God expresses that he is angry is in Exodus chapter 4. I just shared it with you. It's 54 chapters into the Bible. Now, I'm looking at the timeline the other day, and some of it's a little muddy because they don't necessarily know when everything took place, but if you look at a timeline, when God goes to Moses to get his people out of Egypt, about 2,500 to 3,000 years have passed since creation. You understand? It took God more than 2,000 years to get described as angry. I would say that means God is slow to get angry. Slow to get angry. And it kind of reiterates that the God of the Old Testament and the New Testament, the God of now, because God is a God that never changes. The God of the Old Testament is the same God of the New Testament, is the same God of now. That God is not a God of anger and wrath. He's a God who's slow to get angry, and primarily he is compassionate, he is gracious, he is kind, and he is loving. We're going to unpack this. I'm like, you're probably like, no. It's got to be the flood. It's, you know, come on, he was angry. If you go and look at the flood, you want to know what it says about God, that he was grieved, that he was sad. Anyway, fun little fact. So let's look at the first time God gets angry. Moses, Exodus 4. It's the burning bush, right? We all know this story. And so Moses is there. He's talking to a burning bush. If you saw him, you thought, you know, this dude's absolutely bonkers. He's talking to God, and God's saying, hey, I can see that my people are oppressed, and they're crying out to me. I need you to go and rescue them. And what does Moses say to God? No. Send somebody else. And Moses does this to God five times. Five times he does this. In Exodus 4, 13 through 14, then the Lord's anger burned, okay? His nostrils got hot against Moses, and he said, isn't Aaron the Levite, your brother? I know he can speak well, and also he's on his way now to meet you. So don't miss this, okay? I'm gonna come, but he gets angry. And man, the punishment for being angry is severe. What's he say? His nose burned hot with anger, and he said, hey, you know what? I'm angry, but I already got a solution. Your brother Aaron, he speaks well, he's on his way. Wow, really came down on Moses hard right there, you know what I'm saying? It's wild. But then you go, okay, well, why? After all this time, why is he angry at Moses? Well, first of all, it all comes from a place of he sees that his people are suffering, and he wants to do something about it, and he wants to use Moses. And so he's here talking to Moses. He's like, this is my guy, right? He gives Moses two miraculous signs with the staff in his hand and his coat and leprosy and healing him. And let's not forget, Moses is having a conversation with a bush that's on fire, that isn't burning up. And he says, no. No, God, I can't. No, God, I'm not the right person. No, God, I send somebody else. And in this moment, what after all he's seen, he's talking to a bush. What Moses is saying is, God, I don't have trust in you that you can use me the way that you want to. And God gets angry at that lack of trust that Moses had in him. Let's go to the second time. It's also in Exodus. You skip forward 11 chapters to Exodus 15, 7 through 8. Let me get you kind of the backstory here. Moses went to Pharaoh. Pharaoh finally let them go. They're standing at the Red Sea. Pharaoh's coming down on them. God splits the sea. The Israelites walk across. God closes the sea over their enemies. And in the song that takes place after this, Israel's song, right, of redemption, here's what it says, Exodus 15. You unleashed your burning wrath. There it is, right? Burning wrath. And let me give you what that means. The burning wrath is this word, chara, which means to burn with anger, right? So once again, we understand that his nostrils burned hot. You unleashed your burning wrath. It consumed them like stubble. And I love this. The waters heaped up at the blast of your nostrils. He let it out. You know what I'm saying? And just imagine, just really God breathing all of that in. And yeah, I think God blowing out his nostrils would kind of split the sea. Anyway, that's kind of a little bit of fun. So his anger burned against Pharaoh. Let's go back and look. What had taken place? There were the 10 plagues, right? In every single one, God gave Pharaoh a chance to let his people go. And now I know these things were causing damage and hurt, but you're looking at this, and these are acts of God. These are miracles. And so after the 10th one, Pharaoh lets his people go. But then for whatever reason, I guess he forgot and was like, you know what? Nah, let's go get him. Let's go kill him. And then God's like, nope, enough is enough. I'm done with you. He burns hot, and that one, you know, the punishment is a little bit more severe as he drowns all of the Egyptians in the Red Sea. Interesting to note, though, that God gave Pharaoh double the patience than he gave Moses. 10 chances. And then you say, well, wasn't God angry during the plagues? You won't see it. You won't read it in the biblical narrative. We just assume that God was angry. And that's one of the things, too, that we've got to get away from, assuming that God is angry when something happens. Here's one of the things, as I was studying, just because God is angry does not mean that there is going to be judgment. And every time that there is judgment doesn't mean that God is angry. Something to hold on to. Third time, God gets angry. It's in Exodus with his people. And this is one of the things you're going to see is there's this, God's anger burns more with the people he loves most. I just want you to hold on to that one. Exodus 32, you got Moses, Mount Sinai, He's up there. He's getting the Ten Commandments. He's been there for 40 days, and the people are like, oh, you know, we lost our leader. And, you know, if you read about this story, the Israelites just are complaining the whole dang time. Exodus 32, verse 10. Now leave me alone. This is God talking to Moses, so that my anger can burn against them and I can destroy them. Then I will make you into a great nation. But Moses interceded with the Lord his God. Lord, why does your anger burn against your people you brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and a strong hand? Why should the Egyptians say he brought them out with an evil intent to kill them in the mountains and wipe them off the face of the earth? Turn from your great anger and relent concerning the disaster planned for your people. And in verse 14, so the Lord relented concerning the disaster he said he would bring on his people. Again, you see God's anger. Dude is fired up. He's ready to just let it go. But there's a righteous intercessor, and we're going to get into that a little bit later, that says, no, God, no, don't let this happen. And God relents from expressing his anger. He is angry, but he doesn't do. Again, he is slow to anger. And you look at what the Israelites were doing. They just got rescued out of Egypt and out of slavery. They witnessed miraculous plagues. They watched the sea split in two and their enemies destroyed. As they're in the wilderness, they're being provided manna from heaven, and they get tired of that, and God sends them quail. They have water come from a rock. God literally was with them, a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. And before this, they're complaining multiple times. They're ungrateful. They wished they could go back to Egypt. They do all of these things, and it's not until the Israelites get impatient with Moses being up in the mountain for 40 days that they decide to make a golden calf and worship it over worshiping the one true God. And that made him angry. And see, what we see in the first three instances is this, that God is slow to anger. Yes, there are times of wrath and judgment and severe consequences. But God, above all, he is patient with us. And he doesn't desire our destruction, but he desires our redemption. Here's what I want you to understand. When God expresses his anger, he does so with the intent of redemption, not destruction. And I think because of how we maybe have experienced human-to-human anger, and we've seen the destructive force of anger, we take that and we relate that to who God is and his anger, and we say, man, how can God be angry like this? But it's never for destruction. It's always for redemption. And we could never know. I mean, we have the Bible, and we kind of see some of these things play out, but we could never fully know the reason or the purpose behind God's decisions. We don't have the beginning, middle, and end view. God does. But when you view the Bible narrative as a whole, the whole thing from front to back, not just picking stories out and taking them out of context, when you see the big picture, what you see is that the Bible is the narrative of God redeeming his people back to himself. That's always been his plan. He wants to redeem. So every expression of anger, everything you read about, it was calculated. It was forethought. It was not on a whim. It wasn't God losing his cool. I want to share with you a quote from a book called The Prophets by Abraham Heschel. And he talks about God's wrath. He says, few divine passions have been denounced so vehemently by teachers of morality as the passion of anger. It is pictured as sinister, a malignant poison, an evil force, which must under all circumstances be suppressed. The truth, however, is that all these features are not the essence of anger. Like fire, it may be a blessing as well as fatal, reprehensible when associated with malice, but morally necessary as a resistance to malice. And he concludes by saying this, the prophets never portray God's anger as something that cannot be accounted for, unpredictable, or irrational. It is never a spontaneous outburst, but a reaction occasioned by the conduct of humans and motivated by the concern of right or wrong. And there's a lot of words there. I love how he states it, but let me put it simply. You ready? Anger tends to reveal what someone cares deeply about. Let me say that again. Anger tends to reveal what someone cares deeply about. Right? You're not going to fly off the whim and get angry about something that you don't care about. And when you look at the biblical narrative and God getting angry, it's because he cares so much about his people and redeeming them back to him. He cares. The view I have of God is a God who cares deeply, intimately, and passionately about us. And he's slow to anger. And if he's slow to anger, then that means those moments of wrath and judgment that we struggle and wrestle with, we can surmise that God expressed his anger strategically and always with redemption in mind. If you get anything from this, please take this with you. God's anger is not for the sake of destruction, but for the sake of redemption. For redemption. And we still have much to discuss and unpack as it pertains to God's anger, but here's the thought I want to leave you with today. You're learning and you're hearing about God being slow to anger, right? Being long of nostril. I wonder, does this knowledge affect the length of your nostrils when it comes to your anger with God? Because maybe you've been really quick to blame him when things go wrong, and quick to question why he would allow something so bad to happen. Maybe you've been quick to get angry at him due to the circumstances that you or someone you love is facing. Or maybe for a really, really long time, you've held a grudge, an angry grudge towards God because of something that took place. Maybe you're hearing this and you haven't been in church in a long time, and it's this aspect of God that you've always known him to be, an angry God that has kept you from entering into a relationship with him. My prayer for you today is that as we've unpacked some of the layers of God's character and revealed them to you, that it's helped you realize that God never makes snap judgments. He always knows the plan. He's not flying off the whim. And the things we see as negative or bad or hurtful against us or someone that we love, we've got to give him the benefit of the doubt that he sees something and knows something that we do not. And the reality is, it's not only is he trying to redeem us back to him, but maybe he's also trying to redeem someone else. And it might just be through your faith and trusting in him, despite what's happening, that he can redeem someone back to him. My prayer today is that you would come to understand God as someone who is first and foremost compassionate, gracious, loving, and kind. But that you would also understand that he is a God who is slow to get angry. Not that he's not a God of anger, but he's a God who is slow to get angry. He's not out to destroy you. He's out to redeem you and bring you back to him where sin has severed your relationship with him. I'm going to ask that you guys would bow your heads, close your eyes, and I want to pray with you. You know, first today, maybe you are here and you know God and you love God and you understand the redemptive story through his son Jesus, but you struggle with some of the parts in the Old Testament, the wrath, the anger, the vengefulness, and that's kept you from really taking a deep dive into your intimacy with God. It's kept you from sharing about God with others because you were worried if someone might bring that up. Today, I pray that you will have a better understanding of God and of his anger and what it means, that it's not a God of destruction, but a God of redemption. And I pray that today there would be a release of those thoughts, of those feelings, of those things that have held you back. And you can begin to really dig deep into your relationship with God. Maybe you're here today, and it's this one aspect of God that has kept you from a relationship with him. And you know about Jesus, and you know what he did, and you know the love that he showed you, but you can't and have never been able to get over the fact that all the bad and all the people who were killed and all the things that you read about, and because of that, because he's an angry God, you could never follow him. Today I'm praying that those walls and those barriers have been broken down. That today you can let go of those assumptions about God, about his anger, about God being a God of destruction and vengeance and wrath. Instead, that you can see God as a God who is compassionate, who is kind, who is gracious, who is loving, and who is slow to anger. If that's you today, I would challenge you right now to take a moment to talk to him, to confess your feelings to him and your thoughts to him. He wants to hear from you. He wants to talk to you. He wants you to share the things that you struggle with, and he wants to help you move past them to have a relationship with him through his son, Jesus. Spend some time going to him right now. If you want that relationship, you know it's through his son, Jesus Christ, right, who died on the cross for you and me, who took the place that we deserve for the sin that we committed. Then he rose again. He defeated it. And now, Jesus is our righteous intercessor who goes to God on our behalf and says, hey, God, hold on. Remember what I did? I know they're messing up, but remember, you love them so much and you want to redeem them. God, remember what I did on the cross. And just believe that he did that for you so that you wouldn't have to go through that. It's through that believing, it's through the confessing that you are forgiven, that you can begin a relationship with Jesus. God, thank you for your word and for allowing us to understand, for your spirit revealing things that maybe we hadn't heard or haven't read before, God. And I pray that this would help us begin to really, really scratch the surface of who you are as a loving, kind, compassionate, gracious, slow to anger God. It's in Jesus' name that I pray. Amen.